It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Since the economic downturn began in 2008, City Farming has gone from an offbeat do-it-yourself source for cheap groceries to a way to engage whole communities in the farming process and improve nutrition for people living in food deserts. The city of Pittsburgh is home to some interesting agricultural projects at both small and large-scale levels. The possibilities for those wanting to farm in the city are pretty broad, and it helps to know where to start. Heather Mikulas is a program manager in local food infrastructure and agricultural entrepreneurship for the Penn State University Extension Office in Allegheny County. She helps backyard farmers in Pittsburgh develop their agricultural ideas, and she joins us now in Studio A for a look at city farming and ways you can farm in Pittsburgh. Heather Mikulas, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me, and I'm happy to be here.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at #EPLive. Do you consider yourself an urban farmer, or do you live in the city and have livestock? If so, what are the benefits for you, and have you considered becoming an urban farmer but don't know how and where to start? We'll take your comments and your questions again at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Heather Mikulas, first of all, what is urban agriculture? What does it entail?
Urban agriculture can be any activities that you would think of from a traditional agricultural perspective, but scaled down to fit into the city. So this can be anything from apartment dwellers only with a balcony who would put together a container garden, maybe one of those upside down tomato hanging bags that they would grow some cherry tomatoes from, all the way up to community level projects of cobbling together several vacant lots for larger agricultural activities. And sometimes people like to have chickens, bees, and I get lots of questions about goats.
Chickens, bees, and goats. Those seem to be the three that come up the most.
They do.
So what do you think people that, why do you think that we've seen this trend of going back to a simple domesticated type of lifestyle? Is it just about saving money on groceries, or is it more than that?
It's a lot more than that, and people's reasons for doing this work are different. Some people grew up with immigrant gardens. Pittsburghers are very, very proud of their immigrant history. And so, for instance, in my family, I got into gardening and agriculture because my Italian grandparents converted their whole entire yard into a garden, and we would can every August. And so some people do that for nostalgia for their family. Other people do it for practical reasons. I think there's a lot of do-it-yourself motivation as well, just for similar reasons, like why has knitting become popular again in the last 5 or 10 years? People really want to have a direct connection to the earth, a tactile hobby, get some exercise and fresh air. And that really speaks to the home gardener, large-size gardens. And also, a lot of people who do urban ag on a larger scale, for instance, the revitalization of vacant lots, are doing it through a community development or economic generating lens. And so that can have very altruistic community building components to it.
And is part of it, and you touched a little bit on this in the answer you just gave, but is part of it just this idea that we spend so much of our time, working or focusing on other stuff that we don't even think about where our food comes from, and in many cases don't care. If you want to eating healthy means you go to the grocery store and you buy lean cuisine and it has all sorts of preservatives and probably a lot of sodium in it, and you nuke that thing up and you don't think about where it comes from or maybe even how it tastes. It's just you just accept it and you move on, and it's not an integral part of your life. Is this about reconnecting with not only nature, but just sort of thinking about and appreciating the process of growing food and feeding yourself, really feeding yourself well?
Yeah, I think that that's a really interesting point, because have you ever eaten a lean cuisine and then felt satisfied afterwards?
Never.
No offense to lean cuisine.
And I eat them all the time, but it's like, did I eat? Am I happy here with this?
Right. I think that anytime I've eaten something like that, I'm immediately thinking about my next meal and what else I can eat that day. So that is sort of a point A to B product. So I think that whenever people are working with gardening and producing their own foods, you do have a health, nutrition, wellness piece to it. There's also a food access part about where can you find food, especially if you're living in a neighborhood that might not have access to a grocery store. But then there's also the whole cult of celebrity chefs and the Food Network. And you can't turn on the television, radio, or open a magazine really without seeing something speaking to delicious food. And I think that the gardening and the home processing is a way that a lot of people bring that part of their lifestyle directly in touch and in control of it. And a lot of times the gardening is just the first step, and it can be really fun and interesting then to freeze or can or process. And it's just a creative space for a lot of homeowners and apartment dwellers to garden and make some food products and then have great dinner parties from it.
We're talking with Heather Mikulas about city farming, or urban agriculture, if you will, and we will invite you to join the conversation at 412-246-2002. Let's go to Kevin on the south side, not far from where we are here at our 90.5 WESA studios. Kevin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi.
Hello. You're on, and go ahead with your comment or question.
Okay. Well, I have a house on the south side slopes, which is pretty steep and just unbelievably overgrown with vines, poison ivy. I mean, like grapevines that are as thick as your wrist. And I wanted to figure out some way to clear it, preferably like, you know, and then turn it into some sort of fertilizer, or, you know, some way to recycle all that dead plant material and then grow something in there. And I was wondering if you had any ideas of, you know, what would be a good way about, like, you know, possibly rejuvenating the soil and then being able to turn this backyard into a garden.
That's a great question.
That is an excellent question. So how much space are you working with, Kevin?
I would say 30 square feet.
Okay, that is a lot less intimidating than if you were going to tell me that you were doing half of Mount Washington. So I think that in your case with 30 square feet, a machete is going to be your best friend. And I hate to say it, but with our slopes and the type of vegetation that is up there, I would recommend being very careful with composting it for a couple of reasons. One reason is because that material is so fibrous and full of like ligament, like sort of the plant lignin, that it will not break down for several years. And so if you're able to remove the leaves, you can chop that up finely, compost that. But as far as those thick vines and stems, that will take several years to break down. So I'd suggest just removing that and taking it to one of the city of Pittsburgh's recycling centers. There's one in Homewood, and so in North Point Breeze. And so that would be a great way to do it. And then following clearing, I'd suggest doing the soil remediation, maybe through sowing some cover crops and letting those take the space of the weeds that might want to grow next year, and then cutting that down and working it into your soil. So I'd say, you know, remove what's there, do some great cover cropping, and start building your soil.
All right. Thank you. I'll do that.
Good luck, Kevin. Something you said to him made me wonder, several years to break down vines and stems, and why years? Can't you just like dig underneath them and just how deep are they? How rooted are they into the earth?
Well, if you're dealing with a lot of our invasive species that we have growing in Pittsburgh, you're going to run into grapevines, naturalized noxious plants like poison ivy. Knotweed is a terrible invasive problem. And so these plants are really, really atrocious to try and remove.
Why?
Just because their biology is such that they are pioneer species. And what that means is that they can grow on really marginalized soil and properties. And they are so voracious in their growth habit that they will easily take over any type of land or other growing space that, say, a native or an intentionally cultivated vegetable plant could grow. Then the other piece
so
of
what do you do to remove them? You mentioned getting out the machete, which sounds like fun, but that's only going to go so far. So you just have to kill them and then wait for why are you waiting a couple years just for them to?
No. I'm sorry. So you're waiting. You would have to wait a couple years for the viney plants to compost. That's why I suggested just take them off site to an off site compost.
Gotcha. Okay.
No. Just get the plants out with a shovel, a machete, your friends, and then go ahead and start planting cover crops this year over winter. So when spring comes, you have a soil building crop in place. So those old noxious weeds won't generate. Right.
Okay.
And then plant next year.
And people, you mentioned people should be careful. We talked about poison ivy recently on this show and how global warming is creating a proliferation of it, and that it doesn't take much to just brush up against poison ivy, and then you're dealing with maybe a really horrible rash. So you have to be. Is there any particular precautions people should take?
Just cover yourself. So wear long sleeve pants, boots, shirts, and then also remember that the oil, it's something called ureche oil on the poison ivy plant that rubs off, and so it will stay on your clothing and your tools active up for a year. So if you touch that shovel without cleaning it in January, you could look at another case of poison ivy if you are allergic to it. So you just want to make sure you clean everything.
Wash your clothes
really
right
well.
Away.
Yep. Dish detergent, something like Dawn dish detergent can really help to take it out and break up the oil.
Okay. Well, that is good advice. So let's say that, maybe I have a few weeds or whatever around, but can I just plow up my front yard this weekend or start tilling a vacant lot? What does it take to start an urban farm, especially when in the city, a vacant lot, you're looking at maybe some cement, you're looking at leftover maybe metallic substances, so what about removing that stuff?
Sure. So we'll speak to that stuff first, because we do have a lot of that stuff in Pittsburgh. And for instance, whenever I first met a woman named Mindy Schwartz, who is the owner of Garden Dreams in Wilkinsburg, she had bought several contiguous vacant lots with abandoned buildings in Wilkinsburg. And she looked me up and down and said, "Do you know how to use a jackhammer?" And I was just fresh out of graduate school. And I'm like, "What am I getting myself into? This is very different than in the countryside."
Yeah, the Penn State Extension office doesn't maybe have any jackhammers available to loan out.
Right. So in that situation, if you are dealing with vacant lots where there had been pre-existing buildings and there are things like cement, rubble, glass, metal, those things can oftentimes take the bigger resources than an individual could have. And at that point, it would be smart to connect with the city through a program called Green Up, where they will assist with removal of large objects like that in some cases. There's an application process. So you're going to look at a lot of sweat and tears getting into a larger urban ag revitalization project. To your first question about can I tear up my front yard this morning, in any agricultural endeavors in an urban environment, your first item on your to-do list is to do a soil test. Two types of soil tests. First, you would want to do a nutrient test to find out how the soil can feed your plants and what you need to do to grow the soil so that your soil can grow your plants. And also, probably most importantly, do a soil lead test. Both of those things are something that Extension Office, Penn State Extension, Allegheny County can help you with. I think that they're both very inexpensive. Nutrient test is something like $9, and the soil test is $10 for lead. And the reason you're wanting to investigate lead is because we have an industrial past here in Pittsburgh, and the soil has been used for so many purposes. So even if your home is a yard and it's always been a yard, what you have to remember is 100 years ago, we had so much particulate matter and just poison spewing
right
out of the factories that you need to do that soil lead test. And one thing to demystify about soil lead levels is that a lot of people think that they'll poison themselves through eating the vegetables that they've grown in lead-contaminated soil, but the real danger is from the activity of disturbing the soil. So much like we see problems when people are removing asbestos from buildings and say, well, as long as the asbestos is intact, it won't harm you. Same thing with lead soil. As soon as that soil is, dug with and you're breathing it, getting it on your clothes and your hands, that's where the lead contamination danger comes into effect. So call Extension and we'll help you.
That sounds like very sound advice. We're talking with Heather Mikulas. She's program manager in local food infrastructure and agricultural entrepreneurship for the Penn State University Extension Office in Allegheny County. If you have a comment or question, would like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. You can reach us on Twitter at #EPLive. Kristen on Twitter says, for a young professional, how much time does it take to do urban gardening on a daily/weekly basis? And I'm sure that varies, but you know, when we think of what a young professional does in this day and age, you're usually working more than 40 hours a week. So how much time can a person reasonably make, or better yet, what does a person need to do in order to embark on an urban gardening project?
Sure, thanks. That's a great question, Kristen. And gardening, like any other hobby, is what you want to put into it. And so for a very busy young professional, or say somebody with small children who also works who's very busy, you could simply start with a container garden. And if you drive around, for instance, example in Squirrel Hill, on my normal commute, I'll see a home that has window boxes. And in the window boxes, they have planted lettuce, basil, sometimes radishes I see growing in there. Some people even will just put a flower pot and grow a handful of peas up a trellis in their front porch. And so you can get into it at any level that you have time. And so it's a learning hobby. It's always going to be challenging because you're fighting weather, pests, diseases, and your own skill level. And I don't say that to scare anybody away from it, but just if you do want a challenge, both physically and cerebrally, you can get into it as deep or as shallowly as you want, no pun intended. And so you can just go ahead, I think, and try a container garden if you're wanting to take an easy learning curve.
And you can maybe just – it doesn't have to be this massive project on a huge lot. You can maybe just go to your backyard and plant some corn or tomatoes. I always thought it would be cool in the middle of the city just to have corn stalks coming out of the ground, wouldn't it? Rows of corn.
I dig that. And I really think that it's fun to think about how you can grow some edible plants in place of flowers. And so, for example, in my front yard, I have a pumpkin patch. I have strawberries for ground cover. I've got Swiss chard, which has beautiful multicolored stems growing. And so I try to demonstrate that as well to the amusement of my neighbors and myself.
Yeah, it does sound amusing. The great thing about growing food is you can do more than just look at it. You can actually it's food. You can eat it. So that would be something that would be the reward, I think, for all the hard work, which it sounds like some of this.
Right. And I guess one more note to Kristen's question is that even if you want to try something, it's not too late this year. You can go to any kind of store, buy a clearance flower pot on sale, and it's still not too late to grow spinach, salad greens, chard, or kale.
All right, let's move on to animals. What would you consider urban livestock? You mentioned earlier a few things. What are the most common that we find, you know, in terms of people keeping livestock in the city? And maybe you have some recommendations for people to maybe not bite off more than they can chew when it comes to livestock and in terms of the maintenance and that kind of thing.
Right. I think the first thing to remember is that livestock, any livestock, is a living creature and it deserves a great home. And so that being said, there is a learning curve, and Extension has a lot of resources we connect you with to help you to set everything up to have the best chance of success. And by far the most common are chicken and bees. And we're lucky in the city of Pittsburgh because there's some urban ag zoning ordinances in place to protect people who would like to have chickens and bees. And this zoning and permitting process is only about 3 years old, and we're looking at having it revised a little bit, hopefully in the next year, to have it be even more user-friendly. But the general guideline is if you are living on one city lot, you are allowed to have up to 3 chickens and 1 hive of bees. If you want to get into larger things like goats, pigs, cows, you have to have a zoned agricultural area. Or if you are in a residential area, you must pursue a variance. Those can be difficult to get. So chickens and bees by far are the gateway livestock in the city.
And it makes sense because, you know, a lot of people like chicken, and bees, of course, are a great food source of of food and nutrients. And the question then becomes, what do you do in the winter to keep the urban farm going?
So there's a lot of options for that. If you're dealing with chickens and bees, then you're going to have done your homework. And so you know how to insulate the chicken coop. You know how to winterize your beehive. But as far as vegetables, there's a lot of options. And farming the backside of the calendar is a really fun project, especially once you maybe get into your second or third year or are a more experienced gardener. And so winter farming can be really, really fun, winter gardening. In the city where we live and also in this part, we've actually been zoned by the USDA hardiness zoning chart, which is a tool that tells us when our first and last frost will be, so you know when to plan your garden. We've been moved a whole zone warmer due to climate change. And so because of this, a positive side, if there is one, is that you can do great season extension. So with some easily constructed small hoops made out of PVC or aluminum covered in agricultural row cloth, you can create your own little high tunnel for barely any money, and you can grow a lot of cold hardy salad greens and onions and leeks and different kind of vegetables like that.
Stuff you can put in soups during the winter.
Yes, and you can serve fresh greens from your garden all the way through the holidays.
Now, in Pittsburgh, we are seeing the city is seeing its first bioshelter. Talk about what a bioshelter is. This is a very cool concept.
Yep, a bioshelter comes from a whole interesting methodology of planting, which is called permaculture. So if you ever want to Google something interesting about how to garden very sustainably or do urban farming very sustainably, permaculture is very popular in these circles. And what that is essentially is you're mimicking natural ecosystems to produce food. So you're purposely planting food-bearing plants, oftentimes in multi-storied plantings, so from the ground to a shrub to a tree, and all of them are going to bear some kind of food. So the bioshelter is the greenhouse of the permaculture world. And what it is it employs passive solar for heating instead of using propane like in a traditional greenhouse. It's usually oriented southeast, so it faces the sun and captures it. We'll have a very heavy foundation and back wall to sort of accumulate that heat during the day, re-release it to the plants at night. And they're just really cool spaces. We are lucky that we have a permaculture expert in this part of the world named Daryl Fry. He published a book. He's up in Sandy Lake, PA, and he consulted with Garfield Farms here in the Garfield neighborhood of Pittsburgh, and they are almost completed with construction of their bioshelter. And so it's just an exciting thing to see up on the hilltop of Garfield, and that will allow them to have pretty significant year-round production.
It sounds like you could, you know, if you really fell on hard times, you could just go inside and just, you know, you can grow your food and probably just live inside of the thing. That might be a little extreme, but I'm, you know, if somebody can live out of their car, maybe they can, you know, survive in their bioshelter.
I would say a bioshelter would be much more comfortable. You'd have more space, and you could also grow some snacks.
There you go.
And it would also be a lovely place to keep the chickens
snacks
in the winter. Yes.
And yeah, you got your chickens down there.
Yeah.
It's all good. In Cleveland, I hear there's cutting edge city planning relating to urban ag. Tell us what's going on in Cleveland, and do they have an edge over Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh and Cleveland are sister cities in a lot of ways, and I don't want to open the whole sports
debate. We're rivals. We're rivals. So we you know, with all the ways that Pittsburgh competes with Cleveland, we can't allow them to get too far ahead of us in urban agriculture, can we?
Right, exactly. And so Cleveland is doing some absolutely amazing work in terms of planning, urban agriculture, workforce development projects. And the reason it's working so well is because there's this master plan of Reimagine Cleveland. And what it's done is it has brought to the table all of the elements you need to make really smart and large changes in a short period of time. So they have city government, elected officials, their land grant university, so our counterpart, Ohio State, nonprofits, and their county in Cuyahoga County, all working together to create one vision of what urban ag can look like. So this has culminated in several large projects. They've got probably over 60 acres in production. an incubator farm where people can try out farming as a way to produce income. There's also a workforce development training program, and not just the production of fresh fruits and vegetables, but also value adding them into shelf-stable products like jams, jellies, sauces, and salsas, which can produce another stream of revenue. So it's really exciting to watch the policy and the impact that that's having on urban agriculture in Cleveland.
Can we see, we're just about out of time, but can we see, end up seeing more of that in Pittsburgh?
We are on that track in Pittsburgh, and we're very excited about the changes that are happening, and there's only going to be growth in the urban ag moving forward.
Heather Mikulas is a program manager in local food infrastructure and agricultural entrepreneurship for the Penn State University Extension Office in Allegheny County, and she helps backyard farmers in Pittsburgh develop their agricultural ideas. Heather Mikulas, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for listening.
Tonight on Essential Pittsburgh, Essential Pittsburgh takes a summer break, and we invite you to sample Wits, a live comedy and performance hour with host John Moe. Tune in at 8 and tell us what you think at comments@wesa.fm. That's Wits, tonight at 8 on WESA. Until Monday, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Have a great weekend.